Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Along with voting for president this election day, Ohio voters will be casting ballots for the U.S. Senate. WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson had a chance to talk with each of the candidates running for the job. First, we'll hear from Democratic incumbent Sherrod Brown.
Thanks for joining us, Senator.
Good to be with you.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this race, which is apparently very tight in the polls, but it also seems that there are a number of people who have yet to make up their minds. Could you, for me, just briefly draw the differences between yourself and your opponent, Josh Mandel?
I think the differences are pretty clear. On issues as important as Medicare, he wants to voucher. I want to make sure that the benefit for seniors is a defined, guaranteed benefit. My opponent wants to voucherize it and turn it over to insurance companies. On the auto rescue, which matters to Southwest Ohio because there are so many companies that sell into the auto supply chain, including Steel in Middletown and in Springboro, the sound system on the Chevy Cruze. He opposed the auto rescue that I worked on with President Bush and President Obama and Senator Voinovich. It would have been terrible for our state if the auto industry had imploded like it very likely could have if we hadn't done that on a number of issues like that. But I think fundamentally, people realize, as the state's newspapers overwhelmingly have said, including newspapers that did not endorse me in 2006, that Josh Mandel you just simply can't trust him in terms of he doesn't show up for work. He's hired his cronies over and over, as some of his college friends, his old political buddies, at high salaries, and his office is treasurer. He's missed most of the meetings he was supposed to chair to run the Board of Deposits, the most important job of the state treasurer. And I think and his ambition, he's run for four offices in the last 7 years. And I think that I work up every day figuring how do we create jobs. He wakes up every day figuring how does he run for the next office. I think those contrasts are pretty clear.
The other side has criticized you for missing something like 300 votes. Can you explain that or put that in context?
Yeah, I can. My voting percentage in the Senate is 99%. My voting percentage in the House was almost 98%, 97 point something percent. I show up for work every day. Nobody can accuse me of not working hard for the state. I've done more than 200 roundtables where I'll work with, where I'll reach out to 15, 20 people in a community and just ask them questions for 2 hours. My first one was actually at the Cincinnati Chamber of Commerce. So nobody is more focused on doing work for the state than I am. And to make that charge from a candidate whose primary responsibility is to figure out where the billions of dollars in state deposits go and to what financial institution. He's chair of the Ohio Board of Deposits as the state treasurer. He missed the first 14 months of meetings, didn't even go at all, sent a staff person, and it's clear that what he was doing was raising money for a Senate race, including flying off to the Bahamas to raise money from payday lenders. Who raised over $100,000 for him. I mean, I just think when he talks about Washington being broken, clearly Washington needs fixed, but you don't fix it with somebody who believes in cronyism, who doesn't show up for work, and who runs probably the nastiest campaigns. As the Plain Dealer said, a paper that did not endorse me 6 years ago, the Plain Dealer said voting for Josh Mandel is rewarding the nastiest campaign maybe in the state's history.
Let's talk a little bit about the federal stimulus package, which you supported. There were claims made at the time by the administration that the unemployment rate would be much lower by this point than what it is. Has this worked? In what way has it failed?
There's no question it's worked. First of all, one-third of the Recovery Act dollars went for tax cuts to Ohio. And almost every working Ohioan got a tax cut. One-third of the dollars went to tax cuts. One-third of the remaining dollars went to local governments in Hamilton County and city school districts and all state government to make sure that we could keep So to try to minimize the number of teachers and firefighters and police officers and others that would be in librarians and counselors and all that would be laid off. We wanted to make sure that we knew the recovery couldn't come as state government was hemorrhaging jobs. And last, we have seen progress. Since 2010, when the unemployment rate in Ohio was over 10.5%, the unemployment rate has come down now to under 7.5%. It's dropped almost 3.5 points. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Ohioans are working that wouldn't have been working otherwise if it weren't for the Recovery Act and the auto rescue. Those are incontrovertible facts. It's popular to say it's not working, but the facts are the unemployment rate's come down significantly. It's not good enough. There are still far too many people. And, you know, in Cincinnati and Norwood and in Middletown and Hamilton and Batavia that want jobs that aren't working, but we're going in the right direction. I don't want to see us go back to this whole policy. You do more tax cuts to the top and hope it trickles down to the middle class. That clearly didn't work during the Bush years, and it clearly wouldn't work again. So you don't want to go in that direction.
But a lot of voters, I think, are asking, why has the recovery been so slow?
Keep in mind that in early 2009, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month. And history says when there are financial collapse recessions, unlike a more manufacturing type of recession, those kinds of recessions take longer to dig your way out of. But when we were losing 800,000 jobs a month, and we were also not in a very good economy in the 8 years before. I mean, let me give you an example. In the 8 years of President Clinton, we passed a budget in early 1990s, that budget led to 21 million private sector jobs created in the largest budget surplus in American history. Then the next 8 years, tax cuts, mostly for the wealthy, that weren't paid for. I voted against when I was in the House. War with Iraq, not paid for. I voted against when I was in the House. Medicare privatization, basically give away to the drug companies, which I voted for, which wasn't paid for and passed. All of those blew a hole in the budget. We saw only 1 million net private sector job increase during those 8 years. So if you look at history, you can see what we're up against and what we need to do. And that's why we don't want to go back to sort of the Romney or to the Bush 8 years of more tax cuts for the rich and hope it trickles down. We want to focus on the middle class for job growth. That's what we did during the 8 Clinton years. That's what we're doing now. We're seeing for the first time in more than a decade, we've seen manufacturing job increase. 500,000 new manufacturing jobs in the last couple of years after about 12 years of no manufacturing job growth at all.
What do you say to those Ohioans who apparently have just dropped out of the job market? They've given up. They're not looking anymore.
Well, it's a terrible situation for far too many people. I never want to put too rosy a picture, because it isn't. It's still a struggle for far, far too many people. If they're veterans, they can apply for something called the Veterans Retraining Assistance Program. If you've been out of work, if you're 35 to 60 and no longer eligible for the GI Bill, you can sign up you can get trained at Cincinnati State. I was there the other day to sort of help kick off that program there. Get new job skills and something that you've never done before if you're 40 years old and a veteran and out of work. I mean, there are things like that. We've just got to keep this economy growing. The people that are out of work now, it won't get better if you go back to those policies of giving more tax cuts to the wealthiest people in our country and hoping it trickles down and creates jobs, because it didn't work during this first decade. This last decade from 2001 to 2010, it started. What we're doing now is starting to work. We need to keep it going.
Of particular interest to the baby boom generation, ensuring that Social Security and Medicare are solvent in the future. What are your ideas on what we should be doing?
Well, first of all, I say what you don't do. You don't turn Social Security over to Wall Street. The way that some people tried to do 5 or 6 years ago. We know what would have happened with people's 401ks and all. And you don't turn Medicare over to the insurance industry, voucherize and turn it over to the insurance industry, as my opponent wants to do. With Social Security, we there you can make minor adjustments in raising the cap. That's been done in the past. We know that Social Security is not part of the budget problem, the deficit problem. It's separate, and it only needs minor adjustment, not radical surgery. And don't listen to politicians that tell you that you got to privatize Social Security, you got to turn over to Wall Street, you got to make radical change. Are simply not telling the truth. They're more often than not wanting Wall Street's hands into Social Security, a very bad idea. On Medicare, one of the things we can do to save money is Medicare should be negotiating drug prices directly with the drug companies, the way that the VA does in this country, the Veterans Administration. The Cincinnati VA saved millions of dollars because they've negotiated drug prices directly with the drug companies, with the rest of VA all over the country. That's one of the things you do. I think in the new health care law, as we've seen more benefits in Medicare, we've seen seniors now, because of the health care law, can get checkups with no copay and deductibles. They save $600 on their drug bill if they're in that, on the average in Ohio. Literally 200,000 Ohioans have saved money on their, they saved an average of $600 on their drug bill because of the health care law. Those seniors in the donut hole or coverage gap. There are a lot of things we can do to improve services, improve preventive care, keep Medicare beneficiaries from having to go back into the hospital after they're discharged. A lot of things like that we can do to stabilize costs and keep this program the defined benefit it is. People have earned it. It's not an entitlement. It's an earned benefit that seniors, that all of us pay into in our working lives.
Finally, Senator, there's been something like $21 million spent so far on outside attacks on you. Obviously, the Senate is up for grabs this year because of the one-vote margin. Why are you being targeted?
Well, the fact that more money's been spent against me, $21 million-plus dollars, more than any Senate race in the country, I think it speaks several things. One, I think it's Wall Street money, because they don't like my legislation to break up the six largest trillion-dollar banks. We think it's Chinese money or companies that outsource to China their money, because they don't like my China currency bill that would level the playing field when China cheats on and manipulates its currency. Senator Portman supported that legislation. And we think it's oil money, because the oil companies don't like it that I'm one of the people trying to take their tax breaks away, tax breaks that they shouldn't be getting from the American public. So when you speak up for the middle class like that and you fight these special interest groups, their wrath comes down on me. They've spent, as you said, $21 million in attack ads. It doesn't surprise me, but I think it's a record. I think we've never seen anything like this much of any place in the country.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Senator.
Glad to be on. Thanks, Howard.
WVXU's political reporter Howard Wilkinson talking with incumbent Democratic U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio. We'll continue the program with an interview of the Republican challenger Josh Mandel in just a moment.
Support comes from Barnes Denig CPAs, providing ideas and innovative solutions that make life easier for local business owners and nonprofit leaders. Information and insight available online at barnesdenig.com. Barnes Denig, accounting, tax, business insight beyond the numbers. Support comes from Xavier University, offering nationally ranked MBA programs with flexible schedules for working professionals. A new online ROI calculator enables candidates to analyze their potential return on investment with an MBA. Candidates can learn more about earning an MBA from Xavier and use the ROI calculator by visiting xavier.edu/ROI.
Support comes from Cookies by Design, featuring personalized, detailed, decorated bouquets for Halloween, heartfelt handmade wishes, centerpieces, gourmet and decorated favors. Local preparation with same and next day delivery to the tri-state area and now Dayton. Orders at 793-9997. That's 793-9997.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. This morning, talking with the candidates for the U.S. Senate in Ohio, you just heard from the incumbent Sherrod Brown. Now Howard Wilkinson, WVXU's political reporter, will interview the Republican challenger, Josh Mandel.
Thanks for being with us, Mr. Mandel.
Howard, it's always good to be on.
Good. You've served now in the Ohio legislature. You've served for the last 2 years as state treasurer. Some of the polling, though, shows that a lot of Ohio voters still don't know a lot about you, who you are. I wonder if you could talk to me a little bit about what you see as your qualifications for this office.
Sure. I appreciate the opportunity to tell your listeners a little bit more about me before they vote this November. I'm 35 years old, born and raised in the state of Ohio. My wife and I live a couple minutes from where we grew up, and we're not going anywhere. We're going to spend the rest of our life in this state, and we have a vested interest in turning our state and our country in a better direction. My education is from Ohio State, bachelor's degree, a law degree from Case Western Reserve, and I also spent about 8 years in the United States Marine Corps Reserve, did a couple tours in Iraq along the way. I'm sorry, go ahead, Howard.
Tell me a little bit about, I mean, those who criticize you for not having been in this office long enough and trying to make a jump too quickly to the U.S. Senate, talk specifically about what it is that qualifies you as a United States senator.
Sure. Let me talk about my time in public service. I started off as a city councilman. I'm a Republican, but I was a city councilman, got elected in a Democratic district, a Democratic city, and was proud to lead the charge on the first ever property tax rollback in our city, the only municipal property tax rollback that we know of in our home county, and one of the only ones in the history of the state of Ohio. I then went on to serve in the state legislature, served in the Ohio House of Representatives, was elected not once but twice in a district at 2-1 Democrat to Republican. In fact, when I first ran the Republican Party, a lot of the leaders there told me that it was impossible to get elected because it was such a heavily Democratic district. But I went out there and did it the old-fashioned way. Knocked on approximately 19,679 doors, wore out three pairs of shoes, and got elected with a good mix of Democrats, Republicans, and independents, and was proud to serve in the state legislature with a lot of good representatives from Cincinnati as well, who were willing to work across party lines to move the ball down the field economically for our state. I'm now proud to serve as the treasurer of the state of Ohio, and we believe the record we have to show from the treasurer's office in Columbus paints a pretty stark contrast with Washington. While these politicians in Washington managed to get the U.S. credit rating downgraded for the first time in American history, we've done the opposite in the state treasurer's office. We've earned the highest rating we can earn, a triple A rating on the multi-billion-dollar investment fund I manage. We've earned the highest rating on our bonds. For the first time in almost a decade, we've earned an upgrade in the Ohio Enterprise Bond Fund. Our portfolio is up over $2 billion. And on top of that, we voluntarily cut our budget 2 years in a row. Imagine that kind of success. Imagine those kind of results. Imagine that kind of fiscal responsibility in Washington. And all that put into a tight package, combined with the backbone instilled in me in the Marine Corps, prepares me well to go take on these political bosses and lobbyists in Washington, and we're proud to take our record there and really stack it up to a record in Washington of just economic failure.
Well, I know the theme of your campaign has been change Washington, and how does a freshman senator who may well end up being in a minority party, we don't know yet, but go about doing that? That sounds like a daunting challenge.
It is a big challenge, but one of the reasons I'm running for this office is because there's enormous challenges facing families in Ohio and facing our country as a whole. And I believe that I have the tools in my tool belt to go to Washington to take on those challenges and produce some results that'll be good for families here in Southwest Ohio and, frankly, for throughout the state. One of the items we need to work on in Washington in order to meet these challenges is the problem with hyper-partisanship. And it's on both sides of the aisle. You know, Sherrod Brown is a big part of that problem, but frankly, there's Republicans and Democrats who are part of this go-along, get-along crowd for their party. You know, they're just rubber stamps for their party instead of doing what's best for their constituents. And so one thing I'm going to do is try to identify folks on the other side of the aisle. I'm going to look out for some Democrats who might share my views on some economic issues and try to partner with them when it's in concert with my principles to create a better economic environment for job creation in Ohio and fiscal sanity in Washington. Something else that I plan on doing is making these politicians there in the Senate pass a budget. It really gets under my skin that they haven't passed a budget in 3 years, when all of us back here have to manage our family finances and our kitchen tables, and small businesses have to manage their small business budgets. I mean, if you know, a small business can't go 3 weeks without discussing the finances. Someone sitting around their kitchen table can't go 3 months. But these politicians in Washington have gone 3 years without even passing a budget, and it's been a lot longer since they've actually balanced the budget. And that's one of those areas where I think we can really get things done in a bipartisan way.
Well, let's talk about a few issues here. I know you're on record as saying you would have opposed the auto industry rescue or bailout. Can you look at that now and say that that did not help the state of Ohio?
Well, it depends who you're talking to. I mean, not too far from Cincinnati, there's a bunch of workers who worked at Delphi, and they lost most of their pension because of this bailout process. And so you had folks who were middle-class Ohioans in their 60s and their 70s who were owed their pensions, who earned them, who deserved them, and they lost their pensions. I mean, imagine being one of those people, sitting at your kitchen table, sitting in your living room, thinking that you have a pension to live in retirement, and it's gone. And I could not have supported a process that would have stripped from middle-class employees, middle-class retirees, their pension. Think about these auto mechanics who were, working right there, right here in the Cincinnati area, fixing cars, getting their hands dirty, these men and women. What did they do wrong? But some unelected bureaucrat from Washington, some politician from Washington says, sorry, but we're gonna push you out of your job. I mean, I could not have supported a process like that. I mean, I'm not a bailout type guy. You know, if you have folks who are listening, if they're looking for a bailout senator, it's probably Sherrod Brown. He voted for the largest Wall Street bank bailout in American history. He voted to take our tax money, use it to bail out Wall Street Bank, bail out Fannie and Freddie, and bail out large corporations. And he's the bailout senator. And I think citizens, Democrats and Republicans, are sick of all these bailouts. Because you know what? As we're struggling here, no one's coming from Washington or Wall Street to bail us out. But Sherrod Brown and these other politicians think it's okay to take our tax money and bail out Wall Street Bank. It's just not right.
The Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, would you be a vote to repeal that in its entirety?
We have to repeal it. And then I think we need to talk about some of the good components. And if there's a way to provide coverage for pre-existing conditions, to allow young adults to stay on their parents' insurance at age 26, I think those are good things. We also need to really take on junk lawsuits in this country. These junk lawsuits have become an industry, and they're unfortunately causing the cost of healthcare to increase. Another problem with healthcare we gotta take on is the cost of insurance. We should allow for a purchase of insurance across state lines. Open up the markets. Listen, our citizens are smart enough to make decisions on their own. I believe when you open up those markets, health insurance costs will go down for us as patients, as consumers, and quality and access will go up. We also need to get the federal government out of the way when it comes to the patient-doctor relationship. Unfortunately, this Obamacare legislation, but other regulations in Washington are trying to place faceless Washington bureaucrats in the doctor's office with us when we're making personal health care decisions. And in my mind, health care decisions should be made between a patient and their doctor without some bureaucrat in Washington telling us what doctor we can see or what procedure we can have for, our ailing heart or for cancer. Or for diabetes or some other type of treatment.
Well, let's talk about the entitlement program, Social Security, Medicare for a little bit, and the future solvency of those programs. Would you agree with the Ryan budget in terms of turning Medicare into a voucher system?
I have not come out in support of his plan. I think the components that talk about block granting Medicaid make some sense. Also ensuring that if people are on welfare, that they have to work to get off welfare eventually. I mean, this welfare to work is a good bipartisan concept, went through in the 90s. And now, President Obama, Sherrod Brown, and others are trying to say that folks can stay on welfare without any ultimate goal to actually get a job. I mean, that's just not right. And so one thing, one thing we have to do, getting back to specifics on Social Security and Medicare, we need to restore the Social Security Trust Fund. Sherrod Brown and every politician in Washington who's raided the Social Security Trust Fund over the past two decades should be ashamed of themselves. And they should have to answer to these senior citizens who are owed these Social Security checks. So we have to restore the Social Security Trust Fund and hold accountable politicians like Sherrod Brown and others who raided that fund and used that money to bail out Wall Street banks and give it away to foreign countries. Secondly, when it comes to Medicare, we got to repeal Obamacare because Obamacare cut $716 billion from Medicare. And we don't have $716 to cut from Medicare. In fact, as the baby boomers are becoming senior citizens, we're going to need more money to fund Medicare, not less money. And those are some things we really need to approach in a bipartisan way.
Now, the Obama administration says, no, we're taking that money from the providers, not from the recipients of Medicare.
That's gobbledygook Washington speak. I mean, the reality is $700 billion plus is going to be cut out of Medicare. That's what it means to patients. You know, President Obama and Sherrod Brown can try to, you know, put lipstick on a pig, but at the end of the day, what they're trying to do is cut money from Medicare, and it's bad any way you look at it.
But you don't support turning Medicare into a voucher program?
I have not come out in support of that proposal.
Okay. And in terms of job numbers in Ohio, I mean, certainly we're a little bit better than the rest of the nation, but there are a whole lot of people who are still looking for work, and some who have just dropped out and aren't looking for work anymore. What do we tell them?
Well, we need to do everything we can to create a better economic environment so they have a job. I mean, this is one of the main issues that separates Sherrod Brown and me in the campaign. I mean, Sherrod Brown has failed the middle class. Since he went to Washington, unemployment rate has gone up, tuition costs have gone up, gas prices have gone up, healthcare costs have gone up, foreclosure rates have gone up. I mean, that's a record of failure for the middle class. You know, when I'm in Washington, I'll do everything I can to create a better economic environment for the middle class. And unfortunately, the environment that Sherrod Brown has created has gotten worse and worse for middle class Ohioans.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mandel.
Hey, Howard, it's always good to be on. And for everyone here listening in Cincinnati, I hope to earn your support. If you want to learn more about my jobs plan, you can go on my website at jobs.joshmandel.com.
WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson talking with Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate in Ohio, Josh Mandel. You can hear the final debate between the two candidates tonight at 7 o'clock on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Impact Cincinnati. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. We also had engineering help today from Sherry Mancini and Kevin Rowinski.